Like Family with Brenda Donoghue.
In this edition of Like Family, I talk to members of three families about coping with grief.
And you can join the conversation on Twitter at Brenda Donoghue or email brenda@rte.ie.
I'm travelling the back roads on the border of Sligo, Leitrim and Roscommon to the house that John and Mary O'Reilly built for their family of six children. Now young adults, they don't all live there anymore.
Hello.
But it's a place they call home.
Hi, Nicola.
I'm Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine. How are you? And of course,
Kristen. No, upstairs with the dogs.
Yeah, come up here now. We'll have a cup of tea at least out of the room.
Okay, thank you. So this is that. Oh my God, I'm just passing your fridge. Now, there are a lot of family photos, which is lovely.
Yes, and then some famous people.
famous faces.
Why is Aidan O'Shea, Mayo player, on your fridge?
He's not. He's there a while now. He was a bit of, I think he was motivation at one stage for one of us.
Yeah, someone was on a diet and, you know, anytime you go to the fridge, you'd see him, you'd be like, no, close that fridge. So there you go. So, yeah, that's why he's there.
But we also have family.
That's
who is
the whole
this?
Crew when we yeah. were, that was an auntie's wedding.
Yeah.
Not a lot of pictures of it. Well, Keith's not there. Keith's not born yet. Nora's crying. Yeah, a few old family photos. Yeah. Us munching and daddy beside us at a communion of some sort. Yeah. Cousins well. And
that was at a confirmation. Was it Nora's confirmation?
Nora's confirmation.
Yeah. Annoying daddy getting pictures with him.
And there's Nicola's 21st.
Daddy was hilarious. Like he was so funny and he'd, do you know, he was very reserved as well though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You could have such crack with him, and like anyone you'd ever chat to about him, like old friends and that, would say the same. He was
so
a great
funny.
Person and, you know, he would do anything for anyone. And yeah, he was a really, really great person. Like, and then Mammy was, she was a great person too. Like, she would give you her last €10 out of her purse. Like, you know, if we were going shopping to town or anything like that, she'd give you money, but she'd give your friend money too.
Yeah.
She really was an unbelievable person, and it's lovely to be able to sit and actually acknowledge how lovely she was. But, they were great.
She would be so proud of...
Oh, yeah.
Of like everything, of Keith being finished school, like Keith was her baby, you know, and even Nora, you know, the style of Nora as well and stuff, I think, and you know, Michelle over there qualified living in England, and she'd be so proud.
The achievements for
being a general nurse,
like, and all just Mammy, she loved all that kind of stuff.
It was hard for them with six children as well, because you know, Mammy was at home babysitting children and Daddy was working as a security guard, so things were tough on them. Like, obviously with six children it is hard, but like that, she worked hard, they worked hard to make sure we got everything we needed, and we had everything we needed, like, and that was it, you know.
There's a line in a John B. Keane play which says that you don't know what grief is until it comes knocking at your own door. Their father, John, died suddenly in 2013.
Yeah, it was the 9th of October, a normal evening, and Daddy just went off fencing and didn't come back, basically, and had actually passed away suddenly. He had suffered a heart attack, and very soon after that, we were only, you know, the funeral was finished and we were coming to terms with this new life of one parent gone, and our mum got sick then very soon after, probably the November sickness started. January time, Mam was admitted to hospital and was receiving treatment for a very severe cancer. And in a 9-month period, we had lost her then on November 16th. So within the space of 13 months, we had lost the main people in the home, you know, and then the six of us were left to decide what we were going to do.
And just remind me the ages of everybody around that time.
Keith, at the time of losing Daddy, would have been 12. Michelle was 22. And then us within the ages of Nora would have been 14, 16, 17 and 18.
So when you experience loss, like you've all done, I imagine it's exhausting.
Funny, when I think back to around that time, I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I only really started kind of living again when I started teaching. Because, like, I just can't remember those 2 years. I think it's you go through so much trauma that your brain just blocks it out.
We just wanted to get home. We worked and we did college and then we'd all come back here. And this was such a comfort for us, the home. Yeah. We'd put on Grey's Anatomy and we'd all cozy up. No, this was massively healing. It really was. We were together. We'd watch things together. And that just being at home, and I think closing out the door and putting away the fake smile and the how are you, and you'd have to answer, and you could come in here and you could just be yourself and watch the telly, and the house was a massive comfort during that time.
And speaking of the home, did it feel different when they weren't here?
You were going around looking for them. You didn't know where they were. Like, Mum used to sit out there in that corner, and Daddy used to sit there, and they listened to their country music in the evenings, and you're lost going around. You know, and even Mammy pooed her in the back kitchen, and yeah, you're looking for them, and then eventually you realise, God, you know, they're not coming home, or the car isn't going to drive in the lane, or, you know, you miss the smells as well. Like, Daddy worked on the farm, and, you know, the boots would be thrown at the door, and the smell of barm and that, like, that was gone too.
And Gillette shaving foam, and, you know, when he'd be going for mass, or, like, Mammy would spray her perfume, and when we were younger, she'd give us a little kiss, like, so we'd have her lipstick on, and just the smells and the music, like, we wouldn't turn on the country music, but that was a massive part of growing up here. The smells of the fry on a Sunday in the morning when they've come back from mass, all these things. The house is very different. Now, it's not like we weren't going around crying like zombies, but it's just a massively different feeling. It became our own little place, I think, as well. And our music would be playing now. And, you know, as I said, we get to choose what's on the telly because Daddy wouldn't let you watch Friends or whatever you wanted. Like, he'd have to decide, and he'd fall asleep on the couch then, and you'd be trying to get rid of him, you know. So you could watch what you wanted. But, massively different. But they built such a lovely house for us, and we're so lucky in that way.
Do you want to come in on that, Nicola?
Well, I was just, when the girls were talking there, I was thinking about the amount of times you'd go to your phone to even text them or try, and then you're like, oh no, like, you know, when you're in the house and they're not here, and you want to say something, might be something, the stupidest, smallest thing, but, and then you realize, oh, I can't say that now, I can't actually do that now. So it was hard that way, but
a lot to deal with, a lot to come to terms with. So there were six siblings, ranging in age from...
Keith was 12 when we lost Daddy, and Michelle was 22.
Okay. So people are at different ages of development. That manifests itself in how people dealt with the loss. And then as you get older, does it change?
Like, there was anger and there was annoyance, as in we were, you know, there was frustration. Like, but I feel like I was probably more open, maybe, with it. And I always feel like I was, like, maybe, I don't know. But, and then maybe Nora wouldn't have been, but as she gets older, she chats more. There's definitely the different personalities. I don't know, is it an age thing?
Yeah. It's saying there that you were open. Like, I felt like I would have gone through a lot of frustration. Like, little things would annoy you, something shocking, and like, oh, a cup been left on the table. Like, why aren't you cleaning up after yourself? Those kind of things would, like, really get to me. You're also going through, like, everyone is going through this individual thing. And the why behind everyone is so different, like, makes you realise that with other people you're dealing with, there's always a why to someone's behaviour. Always a why. Yeah. And you have to realise that, you know, if someone's frustrated, there's something going on there. And you have to be a bit, you know, be kind to other people and just realise that everyone is going through something, no matter what it is, and you don't know.
And I suppose it gives you a different perspective.
Yeah, you find in yourself that you listen to people a lot more. Your conversations with people aren't just, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. It's, you actually sit back and you kind of want to know how people are. You listen to them. Like Lorraine's, a bit more empathy for people and what people are going through.
Do you find as you get older, you're now all in your 20s, and does how you grieve change?
I would think so. Acceptance, I think, isn't you never get over it. You get on with it, or you get used to it. You probably don't cry as much, I don't think.
Yeah. You learn to live with it.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you wouldn't cry as much, but you might have an odd cry, and it would be a really intense cry.
That's so true.
Yeah. But then it's over, and then you kind of get on with what you're, you know, you have that moment of being upset. You might be driving in the car on your own and that kind of time, but you're able to process the feelings a lot more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. A big thing about this loss was seeing how quick Nora and Keith had to, like, grow up. That was upsetting. Like, Keith learned how to use the washing machine at the age of 14, and it was because, like, we killed each other. It wasn't always like, you know, we're grand. Like, Keith at the age of 13-14 learned how to put on his own wash, because we were like, who are you expecting to do it? And he got on with it, and so did Nora in her own way, you know. So it's just, it's heartbreaking for them that they had to. Yeah. They grow up so quick and they're amazing. So yeah. I think that keeps us all going as well. Absolutely. Watching them, like how they deal with it at the age of them. So that's a
absolutely.
Yeah, because your average 13 or 14 year old isn't doing their own load of washing, like, do you know?
Yeah. Like he had to be resourceful. He had no one to fall back on, like, and he's, you know, he's gas, like we'd kill him, but we do get on with him too. And he's very like daddy in different ways. He's funny and he looks like daddy now, you know. So we adore him. We don't tell him we do, but do you know?
I bet you do tell him. I actually do. Do you see your parents coming through in yourselves?
Yeah, very much so. And even like Auntie Breach, their mammy's sister, would often pick the bits out of us, you know, that are like, she'd be like, oh, Lorraine, it's very like Mary. Do you know, she'd have this thing, but we do as well. Of course we do.
Another thing as well, like I remember sitting with Mammy on my own in the hospital room and I was upset. We had been told that it was going to be coming close to the time. And my thing in my head was, yeah, but like, you know, Daddy was gone. But in my head, who was going to walk me down the aisle? And it was, she goes, Keith will do that. Don't worry about that. And I was like, oh, yeah, like he will, you know, like, but it was, that was a fear of mine for the future, was they weren't going to be there for that. Or and now a lot more recently we're all become very broody and whatnot. I think of like when we have babies and, you know, like, oh, to ask the question about, oh, you know, what bottle do you give, or, you know, those kind of questions, like,
you know, she would have known exactly what to do. And you asked us there to explain Mammy and Daddy, and I think to myself, how am I going to describe them to my kids? How am I going to say Daddy was daft and great crack and that Mammy was so strict but so loving as well, you know? So I always think about that.
Yeah,
how do we,
it's heartbreaking that they won't be there to see that stage of us. And just, they'd just be so proud.
Absolutely.
they'd love to see it themselves. And I would just, I would have loved to have seen Mammy and Daddy as Granny and Granddad.
Oh,
like, it
God.
Just it would have been hilarious.
That's the thing though, like, a huge part of our future is missing. Yeah. And it always will be, but like that, it's just a thing that I suppose you kind of just get used to. You know, they're not going to be there, but they will in their own way. They will.
Amazing. I think if in the future we ever went through this, I know that the girls would look after my babies. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You know that you have that support in the same way that Breege, Mammy's sister, supported us. We know that we will be so close knit.
And that's their legacy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the tea and the talk continued with Kirsten, Lorraine and Nicola. They are so grateful to their community who supported them, but you can see how they have supported each other too. Back on the road, I'm heading to Kildare. I've met Jean before. She's a very active grandmother who minds her daughter Niamh's children. This is the music Jean and her husband Ernie first danced to in their teens, and their love lasted through their marriage and children to a happy retirement, dividing their time between Ireland and their house in Spain.
From the word go, it was just, you know what it was like.
Yeah.
You can't explain. The man just oozed love for me. That's just it. He'd come in the evening, he'd come up the hall, he'd say, hello, wife, and your heart would miss a beat. And then if there was a thing on the radio, a song, he'd start dancing with me. I had nearly 40 years of it. That's the only thing I can say about it. Now, don't get me wrong, we had rows, and because he was a continental truck driver and he'd often come in on a Saturday night and go out on a Sunday, and I was divorcing him. And always before he'd get on the boat, he'd say to me, you'll have to tell me you love me. I can't get on the boat without you telling me this. I mean, I loved him till the day he died, and vice versa. I mean, really now, broken-hearted, never, ever the same since the day he died.
You've never had a happy day since the day he died?
No, no feelings. I just go through the motions. And the funny thing about it was, he died the 2nd of October 2010, but I so much paperwork to do and all. I was convinced when all the paperwork was finished, I was just going to die. I lost 8 stone in weight. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. I couldn't go out. I couldn't even bear to meet people in the village that I lived in. that I just couldn't cope. But 9 years later, here I am talking to you in my kitchen.
And Niamh, the love that your mother speaks of, the romance that she speaks of, as it continued into their marriage, were you aware of that as a child or a young adult?
As a teenager, yeah, you would have. You'd be like, oh my God, here we go again. How? Like, he'd come in and he'd pinch her on the ass and you'd be at the table going, can they not see we are actually sitting here? Or you might hear something you shouldn't hear at night. And you'd be like, I'm in my room. Can you not hear me? I'm here. But that was life. And I think now we want that from our own marriage is what they had. Like, we want to be as happy as they were for nearly, what was it, 38 years, 40 years? Mm-hmm. And it was true love.
Ernie died in Spain. He'd gone out for an early morning walk. And when he didn't come back, Jean got worried.
I rang his phone and a Spanish guard, a civil, came on the phone. He had broken English and you must come. And when I went around the corner, he was just lying on the ground in his shorts and his new runners. And they had a piece of kind of tinfoily stuff over him. And that was it. There was no marks on him. There was no nothing. And he was gone. If you looked at him, you just think, oh, he's asleep. And then it was just chaos. I got him the best coffin I could get and brought him home and laid him out here for 3 days for everyone to say goodbye to him. So that was it.
Like, when Dad died, James, my oldest, was only 5 weeks old. So I went through never bonding with him and never grieving for Dad, because which do you do more of? What do you do? It was just so hard, like those first couple of weeks. It's just heartbreaking. Like,
what would you notice about how you grieve differently, Niamh, to your mum?
I mean, Niamh can go home to her family. At the end of the day, I'm on my own.
If I haven't thought of him for a day or two, I go, oh my God, why didn't I think of him? And you may forget, and it's for that moment you just forget that he is actually gone. And whereas Mam would grieve every day.
So you and Ernie struck me as having like a great relationship. No, Niamh's going, yes. But that all stopped as well, the whole physical side. Was that like something we don't talk about?
There's no point in beating around the bush. We had a great sex life.
Yeah.
That all died with him. No feelings left at all. We made time for each other. Always made time for each other, no matter what. That was part of the marriage. Mom. That was part of love. Mom. That was part of everything. Mom. You know? Mom. I know people frown upon it, but...
No, like, yous were in love. Yous had a good, healthy marriage. Like, the kids didn't need to have to hear it, but we were adults. We hadn't moved out. It's our own fault.
Yeah. And that's the way it was.
But I imagine just 40 years of kind of having somebody there, you know, just physically, you know, in the bed. Like, your whole body kind of is used to having that person there.
Well,
that
I've never actually slept on my side of the bed since the day he died. I sleep on his side of the bed. Where I used to go to bed and just fall asleep. Now I have to take a sleeping tablet. But even when we were in the bed, he just liked me close to him. That's just the way it was.
What would you say, Niamh? Has it brought you closer?
It didn't bring us closer or anything. Like, we're not a family that hugs and we're not a family that would be sitting up drinking tea into the wee small hours talking about him.
Yeah.
There was never that. But there was never that before he died either. No, we weren't that type of family. No. We would have a laugh together, but we wouldn't be one for going on a session together or, as I said, sitting up talking. I do find it's changed Mam more. Like, she's less tolerant, whereas you're trying to bite your lip is not to snap. because you are going, it is a bad time of year for, or especially like coming up to your wedding anniversary or his birthday or the anniversary of when he died, you do find yourself going, just be a bit more patient. Just try.
Mm. Have you learned anything from Ernie's passing?
Not really.
I've learned to take more photos. I've no photos of my dad and my oldest child. I've no photos, and I'll always remember a night that I lay on the couch and James was in his Moses basket and he was lying beside Dad, who was asleep, and I went, God, that'll be a lovely photo, and didn't reach to take a photo. And that's my one regret. Always, always take photos.
And Jean, do you look forward to a time when you'll be together again?
No, I don't think I'll ever see him again.
Mm. Really?
I don't, no. I don't believe in heaven. I don't believe it.
But are you not better off thinking that way, knowing
maybe
he's around you?
Maybe, but I just, I believe you go into the ground and you just, that's it.
For Stephen, his faith has sustained him through a long illness. Born with the support of his family and the hospice community, he's a much-loved son, brother, uncle and granduncle who runs a busy accountancy practice and loves hill walking.
I don't see myself as sort of a sick person with terminal cancer, even though I am. I just try and see today and what I can do today, and I can do a lot of things, and then tomorrow, and then, you know, maybe what will I do this summer? Now, I wouldn't have the energy to do anything major, but it'd be nice to go away for a week down the country somewhere. We're all going to die sometime. I don't know when I'm going to die. There's a phrase, get busy dying or get busy living. Well, I might as well get busy living. It's nice to be able to talk about it because it's even in my own mind, it's putting together the different aspects of it. You know, I've been through this journey, but just to stop and think, you know, how's it gone? What have I learned? I've talked to my mum and dad. I've talked to my brothers. They've been very supportive. I've continued as much as I can, participating in family occasions, and that's important to me. Family meals and so on, even though I can't eat, I'd be happy to be there and chatting and because a lot of meal times is really sociable and you're catching up on news and you're talking. I'd be there with everyone else. And I could talk more because I wasn't eating. My relationship with my family has changed. I think it's changed among all my brothers in the sense that when somebody is sick, they kind of band together and help out as much as they can. That kind of brings everyone together a bit as well, I think.
Does that give you, I suppose, a sense of happiness?
Yeah, it does. It gives me great. It gives me a lot of joy just seeing, because to have a family, to come from a family, the two parents and then the eight children, all together at events, you know, it's a great comfort and a great joy to see that, and that everyone loves each other, and it's a great source of strength there.
How long have you been coming to Our Ladies in Blackrock?
I first came in January this year. You see, we're body and mind, you know, and the body, the doctors, the hospital, and they did the surgery and they beat up the body a bit. But then what about the minds? How are you coping with all this? Now, my faith is very important to me, as I said. And therefore, that helps me a lot. there was a poem we read at the mental health, if that's the right word for the talks. It was comparing us to a river. So, like when we're born, we're a little trickle and a bit bubbly, and like the source of a river, and then the river gets bigger. And my life now would be more like a big river, full flow, flowing down towards the sea. When I hear I'm sick, I'm clutching onto things. Like, for example, a branch at the edge of the river with a lot of effort and stress, hanging on to things that I should let go of. And when you let go of something, it's suddenly, it's okay, you know. It's, you go with the flow. You know, if I'm sick, I'm sick. If I can still work, I can still work. If I can't, I can't. And
what's important to you now?
Well, what's important is my family and relations, and to try and do things for others, because it means you're not thinking about yourself so much.
And are you frightened at all?
No, I was. I was lying in hospital one night, and it was Christmas, and I was there alone, and I was starting to feel sorry for myself. I had this sense then from my faith that you're not alone, and don't worry. It doesn't happen to me much, no, that I would be afraid. And when it did happen that time, it didn't last long. And I was almost glad it happened, because it had me to feel part of something bigger, part of a bigger story.
Thanks to Stephen and to Jean and Niamh, and thanks to Kirsten, Lorraine and Nicola for sharing their experiences of coping with loss. This programme was produced by Eileen Hearn.
For more information, check out rte.ie/radio1/likefamily.